if that beer is 5% alcohol, it's 95% water.
Yes. Right?
And so whilst you're putting all this effort into the malt and the hops and the yeast, you're ignoring the most abundant ingredient in beer. So today, we are going to demystify brewing water chemistry once and for all. G'day, brewers. Welcome to Quality Focus Pro Brewers Podcast. My name is Hendo. I'm from the Rockstar Brewer Academy. And today we're going to talk about a topic that I love. But first, I just want to say hi to Adzi. Mate, how you going?
I'm well, mate. How are you?
I'm doing really, really good. What's been happening in your world lately?
Mate, a lot of beer. We've got a lot of new beers coming out. And yeah, which is always great. But yeah, we've got the new, we're using terpenes in one of our new releases. So from
things,
abstract hops, yeah. So it's abstract called, this one's called Pineapple Express, which, yeah, it's just great. It's just a different take on beer flavor and aroma, and really enjoying it.
And can I tell you a funny story about the abstract thing? So I was out having a few beers with Cuzzy, one of our mutual friends,
yep.
And he had the little sample bottle of abstracts, and we had a little bit of a pub crawl, and it was rather late in the evening, and we started out the day just doing like some little bench trials, just sitting at his brew pub. And by the time we got to the last place where we were, I had like a pint of Stone and Wood Pacific Ale.
Yeah.
And he just decided to just dump the whole vial into my pint when I wasn't looking. And it was late and I'd had a few beers, and I just went, whoa, jeez, what happened? Cuzzy, come on, mate. He's a bloody troublemaker, but it's
It might have been a similar experience at Hiker when we were doing some bench trials that got out of hand.
Oh, you just don't want that sort of shit slipped into your drink, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
No, I don't know. We were having a good chat about it, but I was like, oh, man, is this stuff going to put us out of a job or what? And I don't know. I don't think so. But anyway. Hey, but let's not talk about hops today. What are we going to talk about today, mate?
I want to chat about water.
I want to chat about water. Water chemistry.
You're a nerd for water. You love water.
I know. That's why I'm so excited for this chat. I got out of bed this morning and I was like, yeah, I'm going to talk about water chemistry with Adzi. I love this topic because, you know, a lot of brewers, they when they're writing a beer recipe, they focus so much on the, you know, which malt am I going to use? What hops am I going to use? What's the yeast that I'm going to use? And very little attention is paid to the water.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is because it's a mystery. It's a dark art to a lot of brewers out there. So today we are going to demystify brewing water chemistry once and for all. What do you reckon, mate?
But yeah, no, that sounds pretty good. There's like obviously being a brewer for so long as well, like I've used a lot of water, and there's, you forget how much you need to adjust your water. And a lot of people forget a lot of incidental things as well, like their sparge and their liquor down and all that sort of stuff as well. So
yeah, absolutely. I think the key thing that you find with many brewers out there who aren't familiar with brewing water chemistry, I think there's three key challenges, right? The first challenge is like not knowing what your objectives are with regards to your brewing water chemistry. So your brewing water chemistry is going to change depending upon the style of beer that you're brewing, right?
Yep.
And it's not necessarily about the historical water profiles, and I'll come back to that in a second, but it's like if you're brewing a beer and you're putting some gypsum into the mash and some calcium chloride or some magnesium sulfate, or maybe you're one of those brewers who uses acidulated malt, or you put lactic acid in and all that sort of stuff. And a common question that I ask brewers is, okay, so let's talk about, you know, for example, your pale ale recipe. And it's like, okay, so do you put gypsum in that beer? And they go, yeah, I do. And I go, oh, roughly how much gypsum do you put into your beer? And they'll say, oh, 150 grams, that sort of thing. And I'm like, okay, cool. So why 150 grams of gypsum? And they can't answer it. So yeah. Basically making all of these changes to the brewing water chemistry without a clear objective as to why they're making those changes. Does that make sense, man?
Yeah, yeah. So where do we start when we're getting the water? Like, is it in the recipe development itself that we're talking our water? Are we getting our water tested, like, from where? What do we need to do to get our baseline so that we know what we're doing?
It sounds like that there's, like, for you, that there's a lot of noise around brewing water chemistry, and it can get confusing really quickly, right? And this is pretty common, because there's so many things to consider, like hardness and alkalinity and anions and cations and sulfate and chloride and chloramines and all this sort of stuff, and it can just get out of control really quickly. But the thing is that there are some things that are important with regards to brewing water chemistry, and there are some things which are just noise, right?
Yeah.
Yes, they have some relevance in the scheme of things, but to get sort of 80% of the way there, 90% of the way there, you've really got to cut out a lot of the noise and that sort of thing, right? And it's another thing that I find really interesting, right? So maybe you're listening to this show, and when you jump into Beersmith or Brewfather or Brewer's Friend and that sort of thing, and that's where you do your water chemistry calculations. And how you do your water chemistry calculations is you'll select from a little drop down your target water profile, and then you'll click a button and it does the calculations for you.
Yeah. Right?
Now, here's the thing that I find really strange about that, because you're there in Beersmith or Brewfather or Brewer's Friend, and you're putting together that recipe with regards to selecting the right malt, the right hops, the right yeast to try and get this flavor profile, yet you let an algorithm and an app where you click a button and it does the water chemistry calculations for you. Why is that? Where's the control in that? You're just doing what the machine tells you. You ever done that yourself?
Yeah, many times. It's because it's there. It's that ease of use, I think, what it is. And also because if you're trusting the algorithm to base your recipe and your malts and work out all that sort of stuff, you're also trusting it to do your water side.
Correct. Exactly. But I think that by letting an algorithm do the job of what a human should do.
Yeah.
Right. I think what that means is that you're leaving so much up to a computer, because the thing is usually what happens is you'll select a target water profile from a little drop down and that sort of thing. But how do you know that that target water profile is going to create the flavor outcomes that you want?
Yeah.
I mean, because here's the other thing, right? Quite common what happens is brewers go, they use historical city water profiles as their target. Yeah. So it's like, oh, I'm making a Pilsen, I need to use Pilsen water. Oh, I'm making a IPA, I need to use Burton on Trent water. Oh, I'm making an Irish stout, I need to use Dublin water. And in my opinion, that's bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Because I had a really good chat with Pete Brown, the beer writer, when I was in South Africa earlier this year. And we actually, and he if you don't know who Pete Brown is, he's written loads of beer books. And one of the dumb things that he's done in his life, and that's his words, is that he actually took a cask of English IPA from Burton on Trent to Calcutta in India via ship. So he's actually done that England to India IPA journey.
Yeah, right? That's excellent. That's
cool. He's got a book about it, and nearly you drove him batty. But anyway, we actually got talking about English IPA and Burton on Trent water. Now, Burton on Trent water, I would never make beer with it, right? Because it's like 600 parts per million sulfate, and it's going to give you really astringent, very, very, very overly bitter beer, more than what that style of beer would warrant.
Yeah. Right?
And we got talking about the water in Burton on Trent, and he said that he's aware of the Burton on Trent water history, but he said that the area in which the brewery where that historical water profile came from is only maybe a 200 or 300 meter square area. Right?
Yeah, right.
Like a couple of acres. Okay. And so he said the rest of Burton on Trent got their water from elsewhere.
Right? Yeah.
But it was just this one area that historically got it from this one well, which had this really high, really brackish water and that sort of thing. And I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense. Because here's the go, right, is that if you cast your mind back to those historical city water profiles, right, beer styles that are 150 plus years old, right, Pilsen, Burton-on-Trent, Dortmund, Dublin, all that sort of stuff, they hated their water.
Yeah, right?
And all they did was they just brewed beer styles that matched their water. They didn't have an understanding of the water. The technology wasn't around for them to get their water tested.
Yeah.
But most certainly what they did is they go, well, if we make this style of beer, the beer tastes better, right?
Question, whereas, though, like, quick question in the history of this, like, how do we know that the water has remained the same over this time as well?
Correct. We don't.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't know where these numbers originally came from. And if anyone knows, I'd be happy to hear it because I love the brewing history of it and that sort of thing. But you're right. It's like, so you're trying to replicate water profiles that we can't confirm the history of them and how they've changed over time. And we're trying to replicate brewers who dislike the water that they were brewing with. And just brewing styles of beer that match the water. Whereas nowadays, we've got modern technology. We can send our water to a lab. We can get our water tested. And even more importantly, especially with modern craft brewing, we can make any style of beer we want at any time.
We can add everything we need or whatever to it.
And we'll talk about this in a second, but you've really got to rethink the way in which you approach a, quote, water profile. Because I just don't think about water. I actually don't even use the word water profile very rarely and that sort of thing. And so when you take all of these things into account, right, if you don't have an understanding of your water objectives, you're guessing or you're letting an app do the work for you and you're not in control of the flavor of the beer, what's going to happen is your beer is not going to taste its absolute best.
Mm.
But here's the thing, right, is that you can make your beer taste absolutely amazing. If you just change one thing, you just get your water chemistry right, okay? Because when you think about a glass of beer right in front of you, and let's say it's just a pale ale, right? It's just a drinking beer and you're sitting at the pub. If that beer is 5% alcohol, it's 95% water.
Yes. Right?
And so whilst you're putting all this effort into the malt and the hops and the yeast, you're ignoring the most abundant ingredient in beer.
Yeah.
Right?
You've got
to get to be in control of it.
Yeah, 100%. And that makes sense. Like if you've got that huge amount of volume in that vessel that is down to water, it makes sense to spend more time and energy getting that water correct to make the beer taste better right at the start.
Absolutely. But here's the really good thing, right, is that once you understand some of the principles behind it, manipulating your water chemistry for any beer style, it's easy once you know how.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that the first thing that a brewer needs to do, right, when they start going down the path of manipulating brewing water chemistry for the many different styles of beer that you brew, is you got to get to know your own water supply. Like, You got to know the water that's coming into your hot liquor tank, and you need to get your water tested because it has to take into account your pipes coming up your street in your suburb, whether you got municipal water or you're lucky you got an RO system or something in your brewery, or the different filtration and all that sort of stuff. And you have to send that to a lab. I'll tell you something, right? So there's a brewery that I was working with here in Brisbane. And it just opened up and I was having a chat to the head brewer. And after the first few batches of beer came out, he had like a lager, a Munich Helles style of beer. And there was a metallic off flavor in the beer, right? So it tastes like when you put coins in your mouth or blood or something like that, right? And we both noticed it and I was like, oh, that's so strange. What's going on here? And We sent some beer off and we sent some water off for analysis, but nothing really pinged for iron or manganese or anything like that.
Mm.
And then suddenly it disappeared. And then a couple of batches later, that metallic off flavor came back again.
Yeah, that's before.
And it was just I was pulling my hair out.
That's the reason.
And so, thank you, water chemistry. So we couldn't figure out. And so this particular brewer, what he did is he actually rang up the local municipal water authority and was in conversations with them over the course of several months, right, as to where this metallic thing might be coming from in the water supply, because we couldn't find it anywhere else.
Right? Yeah, and in a lager, it's going to stand out. Like you're going to...
Absolutely, because there's not many other flavors in the beer, and humans have a very low threshold for metallic off flavor.
Yeah.
And he just happened to get in touch with the right engineer on the right day. And he had this conversation with this engineer. He goes, oh, you're on such and such street. And he goes, yeah. He goes, oh, there's a 120-year-old cast iron water main running up your street. We've been meaning to replace that for the last 15 years, but we haven't got around to it yet. So what was happening was there was rust flecks coming off this cast iron water main.
Yeah.
And intermittently going in, breaking through the filtration system and into the hot liquor tank and into the beer.
Yeah, wow.
Now, we would never have found that had we not have spoken to the right engineer at the municipal water authority and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it highlights the fact that, A, don't rely on your municipal water report for your, because you need to get an understanding of what your blank canvas is, right?
Yep.
The water that's coming in, because you're going to manipulate the water on top of whatever your blank canvas is, okay? So you have to get it tested at a lab, yep. Okay? Don't rely on the local municipal water report. If you're a home brewer, go do it. That's fine. Good enough for home brewing, not good enough for professional brewers. And there's lots of labs around who can do it, and it's pretty cheap, right?
Yeah.
And it's a pretty straightforward. You need to get calcium, magnesium, sodium, sulfate, chloride, and bicarbonate and alkalinity.
Yeah.
And the rest you can do mathematically. Right? It's just go get your water tested. It's easy.
Yep.
So that's the first part of the picture, right? Is that making sense so far?
Yeah, mate, 100%.
Yeah, okay. So the next thing is, right, is that you need to shift your mindset of around what your water chemistry objectives are, right? Now, instead of going from a drop down, I'm going to do this water profile, I want you to be in control of your brewery water chemistry, right? So instead of thinking about, I'm going to select this drop down with this amount of calcium and this amount of magnesium and this amount of sulfate, blah, 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 right? Or instead of going, I want Burton on Trent water, Dublin water, Dortmund water, Pilsen water.
Right? Yep.
You need to focus on the right outcomes, right? And the right outcome is the flavor of the beer in the glass when it's finished. And there are three beer flavor numbers, right?
Yep.
And they are your sulfate to chloride ratio, your beer pH, and your calcium concentration. They are the three numbers, right?
Yeah, cool.
You ever go to a rave when you were...
Once or twice. Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. A bit more than once or twice, but...
Okay. Who were your favorite DJs back in the day?
Oh, mate, I've got heaps of them. Yeah. A lot of Australian ones, even external. Oh, Avicii, yeah. Baby G, yeah. Eric Bexler. Yeah. Yep.
All right. That's pretty old school, mate.
Yeah, mate. I'm an old man.
Yeah. So the way that I look at it, right, so imagine you're a DJ, right? This is how I think about brewing water chemistry and beer flavor, right? So imagine you're a DJ and you're standing at and you've got some DJ decks in front of you, you've got some sliders and all that sort of stuff, right? You've got to be the DJ of beer flavor, right? And your three little volume dials that you've got on your DJ deck are those three numbers, beer pH, sulfate to chloride ratio, and calcium concentration.
Yep.
Right? Each of them is significant. So beer pH is the sort of, is the acidity or... Beer is an acidic drink, but the level of acidity in the finished beer, if you want a nice Munich Helles, a nice crispy boy, it's got to have some acidity to be crisp. That is what crisp means, okay?
Yeah.
That's why beer pH is important. Sulfate to chloride ratio, right? That's important because more sulfate accentuates hot bitterness, right?
Yep.
More chloride accentuates maltiness and sweetness and that sort of thing. And... depending upon the style of beer you're brewing, you can accentuate the bitterness. Maybe you're brewing an IPA.
Yep.
Or maybe you want to make a nice Munich Helles or a robust porter or something like that that's malt forward, imperial stout, then you're going to be chloride forward and that sort of thing, right? And the third one is calcium concentration. And calcium concentration is important. Calcium is important in brewing for lots of reasons, mash conversion, yeast health, yeast flocculation, all that sort of stuff. But calcium concentration sets out the minerality and the structure of the beer. So you can have the same sulfate to chloride ratio, but if I turn the calcium dial up, that means that, let's say I'm making a hazy pale ale or a hazy IPA, which are very chloride forward beers.
Yep.
And they have a lot, they also have a lot of calcium in them. Now I'm sure you've tasted on occasion a hazy pale ale or a hazy IPA that tastes like you're literally chewing on an aspirin pill.
Yeah.
And that's too much chloride. So calcium, because we're adding calcium sulfate and calcium chloride to our water, if I add too much of those salts, I'm going to start to taste the salts.
Yep.
And you don't want to taste the salts, right? No. So they're your three beer flavor numbers and that sort of thing.
Because the other thing too that you need to take into account is like the beer, the style that you're brewing, it's not just the beer style that you're brewing and what you want to get out as your objective, is that the malts that you're using have their own adjustments that need to be taken into account, like with your pH and stuff as well. So
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Because here's the thing that's really weird, right, is that the style of beer that you brew plays a massive part. In fact, the part of the that plays the most part on beer flavor is the color of the beer. Because the darker the color of the beer, the more kilned malt that's going to be in there that's been subjected to the Maillard reaction during kilning, right? And the darker the malt, the more acidic it is, right? And so when you mash, like, say, 100% base malt, like Pilsner malt and that sort of thing, just mashing it without any water adjustments at all, you're going to wind up with a really high pH, like in the sixes.
Yeah.
Right? And it says that in the, if you get the malt certificate of analysis, it says we did a Congress mash, the mash pH was 6, and that's well outside of the range of what you would typically want for brewing beer.
Yep.
Now, if you go and add roast malt in there, right, roast malt's acidic and it's actually going to bring the pH down.
Yep.
Here's the really weird thing though, right, is that pale malts, and this is just a broad generalization and it's not for every single style of beer, so before you start typing in the comments, generally beers that use pale malts taste better when the pH is low, when there's some acidity in the beer.
Yeah.
And beers that have roast malts in them taste better when there is not so much acidity in them. So for a pale beer, if you're making a nice crispy boy lager, you need that acidity in order for it to taste crisp.
Right? Yeah.
It's not sour, it's crisp. Okay. But dark beers are really interesting, right? Because if you think about chocolate, for instance, right? When they're roasting cocoa beans to make chocolate, there's a process that's called dutching. And what they do is with dutching is that they'll add some sort of alkaline, usually it's baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, to raise the pH of the cocoa beans as they're being roasted. Okay. What happens is if you roast cocoa beans without dutching them, the cocoa beans are going to taste acrid and burnt and astringent.
Yep.
Okay. But if I raise the pH during roasting, then instead of acrid, burnt, astringent, I'm going to get nice, smooth, rounded, chocolatey, rich, coffee, all those sorts of flavors and stuff like that. And the same happens in your mash, right? And you see a lot of brewers who do the thing, I think they call it capping the mash when they're making a dark beer. So they'll do a mash with pale malt. And then while they're sparging, they go and throw the roast malt on top of the grain bed while they're sparging. And it's a real misconception that brewers think that it's a temperature thing, right?
Mm.
But the thing is, right, is that dark, that roast malt, that was kilned at 300 degrees Celsius.
It's already been burnt the shit out of.
Which is like 400, 500 degrees Fahrenheit. The mash temperature is 60 degree or 160s Fahrenheit and stuff like that. It's not the temperature that's the issue that's making your beer taste burnt and acrid. The problem you got is not a temperature issue. You've got a pH issue.
Yeah. Right?
So if you ever try a dark beer that tastes burnt and acrid and astringent, go and check the pH of it.
Mm.
And chances are the pH of it is quite low and doesn't and is accentuating that burnt and acrid flavor as opposed to that rounder flavor. Now, there are exceptions to that rule, right? Dry Irish Stout is a classic example and that sort of thing. But pale beers generally favor a lower beer pH, right?
Yep.
And dark beers generally favor a higher beer pH and that sort of thing.
What are you, like you're saying before about like using automatic tools to work all of this sort of stuff out, because it's not just your mash water, like you need your strike water as well, your sparge, your liquor down water and that, and all these algorithms and such. What else is there? Like I've got a spreadsheet that I downloaded that you probably put me onto. Is that the best?
You talk about brewing water?
Brewing water, yeah.
I love it. I love brewing water. It's such a good spreadsheet, right? Martin Brungard, who I'm a massive fan of, and I've yet to meet him, but I'm really keen to meet him. I'll actually get him on the show, actually.
Yeah.
And when brewers join the Rockstar Brewer Academy, it's the very first thing I tell them to go and buy is go and get the paid version of brewing water.
Oh, it's so cheap.
If you're listening, it's like, what is it, $15-$20, right? And it's a donation, and it's a one-off donation, right? And it's such a powerful spreadsheet that does all your brewing water chemistry calculations for you. And if you use brewing water to do your water chemistry calculations, right, it looks daunting to start with, right? But what we teach in the Rockstar Brewer Academy is how to use brewing water to manipulate your beer pH, sulfate to chloride ratio, and calcium concentration in 6 easy steps. It's so easy once you know how, right?
Yep.
And the good thing about the paid version is you don't need the paid version because for two reasons. Firstly, the free version doesn't have the sulfate to chloride ratio displayed. And the second reason is that we do lots of recipes and we make lots of changes to water as you're dialing things in and all that sort of thing. And with the free version, you've got to have a separate Excel file, right? But with the paid version, it's got this thing called the data manager. And you can load and unload and keep versions of different beers. So if you make a change, you don't like it, you've got the old one sitting there and you can roll back to it and all that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, it's such a good resource.
Oh, absolutely. It's so powerful and very easy to use once you know how.
Yeah, and there's all the little help things in there as well that help you understand.
There's a good tab on there that gives you instructions and stuff like that. It can be quite overwhelming if you've not really looked into if you're a brewer who's looking to move away from clicking a button and taking more control. There's a really good resource in the Rockstar Brewer Academy to help you to just break it down. It's honestly, there's a lot of noise in that spreadsheet. If you just focus on the right things, you're going to make great beer from the very next batch, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, right? So talking about beer pH is one of the flavor numbers in beer, right? You got to think about the journey of the pH of the production process, right? We've got brewing liquor, we've got our mash pH, we've got our kettle pH, wort pH, and then we have fermentation and our final beer pH, right? So typical brewery water supply, you know, municipal water supply, it's got a water pH of 7 to 8, 7.5 to 8, and that sort of thing. When you mash in, the pH drops. You're going to be in the low to mid fives for your mash pH. You're going to water and sparge into the kettle and you're going to have a wort pH. You're going to knock that out into the fermenter and then you're going to pitch yeast. And yeast, with their natural metabolism, create lots of acids.
Right?
And they drop the pH down to, you know, so typical wort pH is low fives. And then beer pH is typically low to mid fours. And so yeast do a lot of the heavy lifting to get the pH from wort pH down to beer pH, right? And it's going to land where it's going to land.
Yeah.
Right? Different yeast strains behave in different ways and create different amounts of acid and have different effects of pH. And then you've got the whole notion of buffering as well, because different malts will buffer differently and that sort of thing. So if you have beer pH as a target number in the beer, and let's say you brew a beer and you ferment it and it doesn't land exactly where you want it to land, well, how can I, on the next batch of that same beer, make the beer pH land where I want it to land? And the answer to that is simple. You adjust your wort pH in the kettle before you knock out.
Yep.
And so what I usually do is how I control beer pH, as in what's in the glass, is in the kettle with 10 minutes to go, I'll take a gravity and a pH of the wort. I'll do, and once I, after flame out, I'll do a liquor back to adjust the gravity.
Yep.
And in the last 10 minutes as well of the boil, I'll adjust the pH. So if the pH is slightly too high, I'll throw some acid into the kettle. You got to do it at the last 10 minutes, right? It's because it's much easier to control. Most of the things are in the kettle, all the hops and all that sort of stuff. It pretty much looks like what the wort's going to look like. And 10 minutes is great because you've got plenty of time to just relax.
Yeah.
Take the pH, cool the sample down, measure the pH, go, oh, it needs a bit of acid. Put the acid in, recheck it, take another sample, cool it down, check that pH. Yeah, you've got 10 minutes to take your time and maybe make multiple adjustments. That's
yep.
Keep in mind, once you put acid into something, it isn't coming out.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. So don't overdo it. Right. Now, this is not to say that mash pH isn't important. Mash pH is important and you should have targets around that and stick to that. But where you control beer pH is in the kettle. Right. By manipulating the wort pH up and down. Pretty cool, hey?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Have you got like quick fire tips or like what are some important aspects that like you think everyone should be doing to get it nailed in?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So tip number one is don't only solely focus on your mash pH as the only important pH number. You need to have targets around mash pH, wort pH, and beer pH. So you're going to be checking pH a lot. If you don't have a pH meter, I don't know many commercial breweries that don't, but if you don't have one, time to get a pH meter, okay? Yep. Tells you so much about the beer, right? Treat all of your brewing liquor, okay? It's not about just putting salts in the mash. You've got to put some salts in the mash, yes, but brewing water is also going to tell you to use some what they call sparge salts, right? And sparge salts don't go into your hot liquor tank. You can just simply throw them in the kettle.
Yeah.
Right. And at the start of the boil, and it's easy and that sort of thing, right? Use brewing water.
Right? Yep.
Definitely use brewing water to do all your water chemistry calculations, right? Only add enough salts that you need just to get the job done.
Yep.
Right. Don't oversalt your beer. Because if you oversalt your beer, you're going to taste it. It's either going to make your beer taste astringently bitter because you've added too much sulfate, or it's going to taste like an aspirin pill because you've added too much chloride, right? Only add enough just to get the job done. And how you do that is by focusing on your calcium concentration flavor number, right? I don't use acidulated malt.
Is that because it's difficult to control the acidity from it? Or
yeah, look, don't get me wrong, they say that I think if you go to Vyman or something like that, they'll say that if you add a certain percentage in your grist, it's going to drop the pH by this and that sort of thing. That doesn't take into account look, there's nothing wrong with what they're saying, and they're giving rough guidance, that sort of thing, and your mileage might vary. Mm-hmm. Right?
But and if you're brewing in Germany to the Rheinheitsgebot, what you probably need use it.
It's so important to set the price of your beer.
Yeah.
Look, if you are brewing to the Rheinheitsgebot, if you are one of those brewers who brews to the Rheinheitsgebot, cool. Use acidulated malt, or go and have a sour goods sitting in the corner of your brewery or something like that. Cool. Do that. Nothing wrong with that. Okay. But if that's not important to you, right, don't use acidulated malt, because I generally don't, because I feel that I can get more control out of the pH by either adding lactic acid or phosphoric acid or something like that. Okay. Yeah. So am I Rheinheitsgebot? No. Do I give a shit? No. Adjust your wort pH at 10 minutes, as we were just talking about before. And here's another controversial one. Don't use chalk.
Yeah, so why?
Well, so water has a thing called the carbonate scale, right? So if you think about pHs from 0 to 14, the pH scale, right? Water goes through a different, goes through the carbonate scale depending upon the pH, okay? So at the lower end, if you think about water and carbon dioxide, this is why I'm talking about the carbonate scale, okay? Water and carbon dioxide and how they interact with each other is dependent upon the pH. So when the pH is low, as in less than 5, I think, the CO2 is going to dissolve into that water and it's going to make carbonic acid.
Yep.
In the middle range pH, right, you're going to have bicarbonates, okay? And that pH range is from about 5 to 8.3, right? You're going to have bicarbonate, like baking soda, which is how basically the CO2 and the water are interacting at that pH range. And above 8.3, when you go to the heavily alkaline, then it's carbonates, okay? Now, chalk is calcium carbonate. It does not dissolve in things less than pH of 8.3.
Right.
What's our mash pH?
Damn it, under 5.
It's in the fives, exactly. Yep. So adding chalk doesn't really do much. And even when you do put it in there, because it's going into an acidic environment, some of that chalk is going to effectively dissolve because it's in an acidic environment, but it does it very poorly.
Mm.
What does it turn into? Bicarbonate.
Yeah.
Right. So why don't you just fucking skip the middleman, right? And if you want to raise the pH of something, don't use chalk because chalk does not raise the pH.
Right.
It does buffer, but it does not raise the pH.
Yep.
Put some bicarbonate in.
Yeah.
Right. Baking soda.
Is that in all beers? Like, do you use chalk for anything?
Nope.
Yep.
Nope. Don't use chalk. I think the only times that I have used chalk is when I was making a lacto starter.
Yep.
And I was following this recipe that I found online for a lacto starter that had apple juice in it and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, cool, okay. But no, I don't use chalk and I don't buy it. But I do buy baking soda or calcium hydroxide is another one.
Yep.
Is a way in which you can manipulate your pH up. So if acids manipulate the pH down, bicarbonates and hydroxides will raise the pH up. And here's another tip as well, right? If you are putting chalk in a beer, you do not need to put acid in, right? Or bicarbonate. If you're putting acid in a beer, something that lowers the pH, don't cancel it out by adding in a bicarbonate or chalk or a hydroxide. They cancel each other out. You're wasting your time, okay? It comes down to alkalinity. Alkalinity is the key, right? pH, the way that I think about pH and alkalinity, right, is my first car was a 1974 Mini Clubman, right?
Yeah.
Classic.
Old school.
And it had an AM FM radio in it with a dial and a little needle.
Yeah.
And so this is how I think about pH versus alkalinity. So when I reduce the alkalinity, it basically means bringing the pH down or removing alkalinity, basically. The pH is the station that I'm trying to tune into.
Yep.
Right? Alkalinity is how much I have to turn the tuning dial to reach that station.
Yep. That makes sense.
And so getting an understanding between pH and alkalinity is super important, right, to getting on top of, you know, what you need to do. So last tip, right, is when you go and brew a beer, when you formulate a recipe for a beer, have those three water chemistry targets in your mind: beer pH, sulfate to chloride ratio, and calcium concentration. Forget about the historical water profiles. Forget about your little drop down in Beersmith or Brewfather or Brewer's Friend.
Yeah.
Right. You make your own targets. Mm. You're the brewer. You're in charge of your beer flavor. Control your beer flavor.
That's right.
Yep. Don't worry about the specific ions, except for calcium, for the most part.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, if you add too much sodium to something, it's going to taste salty, of course. But for most beer, is just let the ions land where they land, and let the calcium be your beacon as to where you want it to be and that sort of thing. Right?
Yeah.
Don't worry about the individual calcium, sodium, sulfate, chloride, and getting all of those numbers exact for a water profile you're exactly trying to match. The sulfate to chloride ratio has a much bigger bearing on the flavor of the beer than you trying to exactly match the all five of those ions and that sort of thing. So it's amazing.
Yeah, great.
And also go read John Palmer and Colin Kaminsky's book, right? The water book in the Element series. Have you read it?
No, I haven't. I didn't even know that they were a thing. So I'm definitely going to go and check it out.
It's the water malt hops and yeast book from Brewers Association. Go read John Palmer's book. John Palmer's a bloody legend. We'll stick some links in the show notes. Absolutely. Yeah. Go buy his book because his book's good. But the only thing, it's quite a heavy read.
Yeah. Right?
And so we do in the Rockstar Brewer Academy is kind of simplify a lot of what's going on there. Is it everything you need to know? No. But will you be able to make changes to get you 90% of the way there at your very next batch? Absolutely. And then from there, just little tweaks here and there just to get that last little 5% in and that sort of thing. And honest to God, if you change nothing in your beer other than the water, leave everything else the same and just manipulate the water chemistry and do it properly, your beer is going to taste amazing from the very next batch.
Yeah.
Guarantee it.
Yep. Mate, that's a great tip in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, people should come and join us at the Facebook group. If you go to qualityfocusedprobrewers.com, you can see the episodes and all sorts of stuff. And I'll leave a link in the show notes and that sort of thing. And I hope that this chat today has helped you with your water chemistry. Do you feel a little bit wiser for it, mate?
Yeah, mate, I am. It's always talking to you. I get to nerd out with stuff that it's not a conversation starter in a pub with a lot of people. Like, oh, you know what this beer water chem's like? Yeah.
We drink beer in a pub quite frequently, mate, and I love talking about water chemistry because it's the first thing I talk about when I'm tasting a beer for the first time.
You can see your face when you're looking at it. You're like, oh.
It's mad.
I even wore my Rockstar Brewer shirt today.
Oh, mate, it looks fantastic.
I'm one of the few that's got one, so I'm stoked to it.
I know. There's not many out there. Love your work, legend.
Cheers, mate.